I'm Robin Amler of IBS Intelligence. You're listening to the IBS iViews podcast. With me is Phoebe Kitchen, Vice President of Growth Equity at Innovia. We are talking about fintech in Europe. Fintech in Europe, and I have to put it this way, I think, from latest statistics, is perhaps lagging behind fintech in the United Kingdom. There are more fintechs active in the UK than there are in Europe, in the sense that they are more successful at raising money. The UK fintech market sector has raised more than the next 28 European countries put together. Is there an issue with fintech in Europe or not?
I think taking a step back, I think Europe as a whole, I mean Europe, UK and the rest of Europe back when we were part of the EU, has really driven a lot of fintech innovation globally. And that's something which has been a real success story for European VC. So I think what we've had, the sort of first wave of that was obviously some of the neobanks, so Monzo, Revolut, some of the other sort of B2C companies like Klarna, for instance, as well. And now increasingly going to some of these B2B use cases, so Quanto, sort of SMB, neobank, etc. I think to say the UK versus Europe comparison in some ways is a bit unfair, because what the UK has going for it is London is obviously the capital, one of the leading capitals of financial services in the world. And a lot of innovation has historically been around London and the city. However, I think looking to the region of the rest of the European region, I think there just remains a lot of exciting areas. I think the European Union in general has been very innovative and supportive of next generation tools. So I think a good example of that is PSD2, which we also adopted as well in the UK, which really drove the innovation of open banking. And that was an EU regulation. So I think it is actually broader than some of those stats suggest in terms of where pockets of those innovation are. And my last point is really, when you're thinking about it on a regional perspective, it's important to think about some of the flywheels associated with some of these big startups. So as I mentioned, Revolut obviously has a big UK presence, Monzo is the same, have sort of established one of the biggest flywheels in terms of a lot of these startup employees have gone on to found other companies. So that has really sort of cemented part of the success within the broader ecosystem, particularly within the UK, for instance.
What would you be looking for in a fintech now?
From an investor perspective, I think as it's also worth sort of taking a step back, where are we in like fintech investing? I think, as you know, we've had the heady heights of 2021, beginning of 22, probably disproportionately were impacting some of these fintech companies. And we've had a pretty significant correction since then, which has been painful, obviously, for some companies which haven't survived that and haven't been able to prove they have sustainable business models. But again, there remains attractive areas of growth and innovation. As I mentioned in my first answer, I think what we're seeing now is a lot of companies addressing the increased complexity of B2B use cases. So particularly, for instance, I've done a lot of work around the Office of the CFO. So you have lots of companies who are now serving the needs of SMBs and mid-market customers, in addition just to helping entrepreneurs and traditional enterprises support increasingly complex needs. So that could be things like usage billing or helping them better optimize their cash flow management and payroll, which is what they really need to do in this sort of increasingly complex operational environment. And then in terms of what we look for in our investments is the same in some ways as what we've always done. It's, can you build a product that your customers love? Can you deliver really strong ROI? And importantly, from a growth perspective, which is where I sit, do you have a sustainable business model? And can it ultimately become an international business? So can you scale across Europe and also potentially into the US as well? And really proven that out in terms of your KPIs, in terms of customer love, your product moat, and obviously importantly, having a great founding team who we believe as investors are the people who can operationally execute and really drive the product visionary going forward.
Well, one of the reasons why we had such excitement in fintech and frankly some quite stunning valuations in 2021 and 2022 is money was free. The hangover of the financial crisis coupled with the pandemic reduced interest rates to such a point that, well, as I say, money was free.
Yeah, money was free. So the rate environment was very supportive, which you saw obviously saw pumped up a lot of the fintech valuations. But in some ways, that's also reflective because fintech is the biggest sector in European venture capital. So a lot of it was sort of disproportionately weighted to fintech. And you had a lot of next generation sectors, so crypto and blockchain, obviously being a big one, who drove a lot of that exuberance as well. And obviously now the environment has changed. So as investors, we have to be more critical of the businesses that we're looking at. So things we spend a lot of time on, as I mentioned, is proving out the unit economics. Can this be a true profitable and scalable business? And I think what you have now in this market correction, a lot of the businesses who weren't able to prove that out have fallen away or fallen under or weren't able to receive funding. But what is emerging, which is exciting from a growth perspective as well, are the winners. There's a lot of opportunity for consolidation. And you've started to see that already in the space. So yeah, Quanto acquired Regate recently. They also acquired Penta in Germany, and that's set to continue. So you're really going to see the real scaled emergence of these true champions and these true winners being able to consolidate the rest of the market or the weaker players who perhaps, as you said, were funded as a result of it was just a great fundraising environment and rates were low. So there's still an opportunity for a lot of those bigger players to scale and increase their expansion efforts going forward.
Let's talk a little more now about what you were saying about the role of the CFO. I would say traditionally the CFO is not the founder of the business. The CFO is somebody who's brought in to deliver some intellectual rigor to the business. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, I would agree. But I think the interesting part of tools to serve CFOs is that the role of the CFO has fundamentally changed. So if you look 20 plus years ago, or even sort of 5 to 10 years ago, a lot of what the CFO's responsibility was backward looking. So it was reporting, helping to put manual spreadsheets together, and making sure the business was running effectively. And what you have now, because the environment has changed a lot, is increasingly complex, as I mentioned, but also there's an increased amount of data at the fingertips of these CFOs. So they're in control of all these mission critical inputs to help run the organization. So as a result, their need to really drive analytics and insights to really help the go forward and strategic vision of the business has really increased, which has really created a need for like a next generation of tools to really be able to help support CFOs on that mission. And the phase one of that was really enterprise software companies who helped, you know, obviously enterprise CFOs do this. So the phase one would have been like SAP and IBM, how they help these large organizations manage their complexity within their business. And now you're seeing a lot of companies doing sort of similar things, helping mid-market and SMB companies upskilling their CFOs and helping them do more with less, which particularly in this market environment now, it can be pretty, a lot of these day-to-day businesses can, you know, have struggled with the operating environment. So it's really being able to sort of help them drive, reduce costs in the business and also free up their time to focus on more value-added activities. So financial planning, ensuring their cash flow management is obviously increasingly mission critical in this operating environment too, are really sort of up to scratch and can help drive the business forward.
The next topic I'd like to bring up is open banking. And I feel like a small child in the backseat of the car piping up and saying, are we there yet? Because I wonder if we are.
Yeah, I think open banking has been a really interesting topic in European fintech because, as you're alluding to, it's not a new concept. It's not a new concept. So it was sort of the genesis post PSD2 in 2016, and I think you've had many different waves of innovation within open banking. So I think the first wave is more on the consumer side. So actually taking a step back, the first wave was really on the AISP side. So they're the data aggregators to help connect the data from the different banks and the customers to be able to basically benefit customers. So I get a better choice of products. It benefits the customers because they get increased sort of access to financial services, which was the whole point of EU regulation in the first place, trying to disrupt banks. And then the next Wave Innovation was on the PISP, so people who can initiate payments. And from a merchant perspective, you want to adopt open banking because it's cheaper, so lower transaction costs, have real-time settlement, less risk of fraud and chargebacks. It really benefits the merchant. So as you said, the first wave as an extension of that was really into e-commerce. So there were a lot of companies who were serving e-commerce merchants because obviously it benefited them because they didn't have to pay, 1.5% to 2.5%, debit / credit card fees. But the issue that you had is adoption was quite fragmented across different countries. So for instance, Ideal in the Netherlands is PISP essentially. They have 70% of share of checkout in e-commerce. So it's really, really successful. However, you haven't necessarily seen that in other countries. It's quite mixed. And I think the issue that you often have is with the proliferation of buy now, pay later, people like Klarna, Apple Pay, etc., the choice of consumer options at checkout has increased significantly. So having like an additional option there is quite hard to capture consumer attention. However, saying that, I think the next generation is exciting in sort of two metrics. I think the first is companies, for instance, like Vault or Bright Payments, who really offer an end-to-end solution for merchants across that e-commerce stack. So really being able to build a true platform. And the second, which is an area I'm particularly most excited by, is the B2B opportunity. So both in payouts or helping businesses, for instance, in invoice management, use open banking to help their day-to-day business activity and business transactions. So for me, that's the biggest area of white space and where a lot of companies ultimately want to end up. But it takes a long time for the infrastructure side at the back end to also catch up with that. So those are the two main trends. And I think lastly is even taking a look outside of Europe, you also have a lot sort of accelerated adoption in other countries. So emerging markets, for instance, India has really strong open banking adoption. It's the same in Latin America. And the US is now starting to grind their gears and catch up. They're quite far behind, but they released FedNow, for instance, last summer, which is their own open banking instant payments infrastructure, which basically allows instant clearing and settlement between banks, which is backed by the Fed. So that's helping to start some of that adoption also in the US.
What I'm hearing from you is that B2B open banking is what you're most interested in at the moment.
So B2B open banking, I'd say the globalization of open banking, because before it was very much European-only opportunity. And then the sort of next generation of e-commerce open banking players who serve the merchants. Because, for instance, like you have a lot of companies pre-PSD2 who are doing more screen scraping. So companies were founded pre-2016 weren't necessarily founded on the modern stack, what it is today. So you do have emerging players challenging some of those like phase one disruptors. So it's that B2B payments and then the opportunity in the US and emerging markets too.
Phoebe Kitchen, Vice President of Growth Equity at Innovia, thank you very much.